WFM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
To Jenny Green, the dream team indeed. I like the sound of that. It's Monday the 11th of January and this is Game On.
Coming up today, we're breaking news on the future of domestic and international rugby. Plus, we review the late drama between Connacht and Munster.
It's certainly good strength and good leg power as Munster drive forward with that one here. They're short of the line at this moment in time. Referee still with an arm outstretched, Connacht under pressure here as Murray moves it away. It's gone towards Chris Farrell, breaks through the cover, touches down, and it's a try for Munster. And that has come after 20 minutes of this game.
Stephen Kelly is standing by to give us his thoughts on Damien Duff's Irish exit and on a few of those giant-killing exploits in the FA Cup last weekend.
Coming forward to Crawley. Oh, what a goal! What a fabulous strike that is from Nick Cerullo with his left foot. Dancing into the Leeds penalty area. Let's fly. He's rocketed it into the bottom corner. And Crawley Town of League 2 lead Leeds in the FA Cup.
Plus, it's Monday, so we'll have our sporting highlights and dual player Cara Healy on his designs on playing for London.
Game on 2FM.
Now, if you want to get in touch, please do so on 51552. We usually start with our sporting highlights, but we are going to go straight to breaking news because there is some. The Heineken Champions Cup and the Challenge Cups have been suspended temporarily. The EPCR just announced this. It follows a directive, one that I think people have been waiting for the last few days, from the French government regarding the participation of the country's clubs in both competitions. Of course, this is because of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we are joined on the line now by Cian Tracy of the Irish Independent. Cian, how big a setback is this news?
Hey Marie, yeah, it's a huge setback. I think we've probably been expecting it for the last couple of days, but the ball has been in the French court, and like we know with French things, these things do take time. So yeah, like, I mean, it leaves everyone's backs against the wall. It's hard to see how the Champions Cup in its current format will be finished. It's going to require some thinking on the hop. I think there's 4 weekends reserved for the Champions Cup knockout stages in April and May. But like I said, it's difficult to see how it will go ahead. We might be going straight to a knockout format now without finishing the pool stages, which obviously throws up huge issues because, you know, if it was to happen, you basically see something like the top 8 teams in each pool going ahead, and how would kind of teams who were just on the outside of that feel about it. So yeah, look, there's huge knock-on effects. I mean, it puts the Six Nations into doubt. Now, Six Nations organisers are kind of, you know, saying that they're confident it will go ahead, but I'm not sure how you can be confident about anything at this current time. And I know the Six Nations will probably be easier to patrol in the sense that it's 6 teams and they can stay in their bubbles, but it has huge knock-on effects for the whole rugby calendar. Even, you know, the Women's Six Nations, it looks like it's going to be postponed. The Under 20 Six Nations looks like it's going to be postponed. So yeah, there's a lot going on, to say the least.
So I guess really the question is then, how much of a grave situation is the game of rugby in, is the professional game in, because of this and because of potentially there being delays to the Six Nations or to the Six Nations and the lines coming down the track and probably tours and everything else in between as well? And, you know, that's even before we've mentioned the current contract situation as well.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot going on. I suppose it's probably worth mentioning, like, that France's concerns stem from the UK variant of COVID-19. Just before Christmas, one of their teams, Bayonne, played in Leicester in the Challenge Cup, and when they came back and got tested, they found that they'd actually contracted the virus, or so they claimed anyway. So look, their concerns are legitimate. The statement says that, like, the French government don't want their professional teams playing UK or Irish teams for the month of January. So in theory, at least, it would allow the Six Nations to go ahead. France aren't due to play a UK team until round 3, which is Scotland, and in the following round 4, they're in London to play England. So I think they open up in Rome, and then they play Ireland in Dublin. So you would hope that by that stage, the situation will kind of have eased. I mean, in the sense of the Lions tour, like you said, like, there's a huge knock-on effect. The Six Nations are sort of adamant that they won't move from their sort of traditional time in the calendar, and in one sense you can understand it, because, like, if the Lions tour was to be postponed in the summer, there's absolutely no guarantee that we'd be able to have crowds come the summer. And as far as I'm aware, like the IRFU were sort of budgeting for, you know, no crowds to be here until the autumn internationals at the very earliest. So that kind of tells you a lot in terms of what the predictions are behind the scenes. But if there's going to be no crowds in the summer, it's hard to see why the Six Nations would move from their current slot. And especially considering, you know, the health is so important. But like in terms of just having your rugby hat on for a moment, unions are all hemorrhaging money, and the Six Nations is a massive cash cow for all of them. So, look, I think you saw Bernard Laporte, who's the French president, and he'd be a major player in all this, coming out yesterday and saying that he wasn't concerned about the Six Nations going ahead. But, like I said, it's hard to be confident about anything going ahead at the moment.
And we heard Andy Friend speaking about it. There's unbelievable uncertainty, even for the coaches, like even preparation this morning for games. These players would have heard what's going on in the background, but trying to get ready for the big games this weekend have been put on ice for them.
Yeah, exactly, Donegal. Like, I mean, this kind of came out on Saturday, and what we're talking now Monday evening when you have confirmation, and it's probably been a bit disappointing that maybe it's taken this long, because at least the Pro 14, I suppose the Top 14 and the Premiership now are all up against it trying to rearrange fixtures. I suppose the one good thing, if you could say, and if you could say something like that in this sort of situation, is that it looks like we will get Munster-Leinster on Saturday week. It sounds like the most likely outcome, which would obviously be great, because if rugby is going to go ahead over the next 2 weeks, it makes a lot of sense to kind of, you know, have teams playing each other from the same country. But whether there's enough time to kind of turn that around and get games on this weekend as well remains to be seen. But you'd imagine like the Pro 14 will be doing everything they can, because it would seem like such a waste to waste a weekend when you could potentially get matches played that could potentially be postponed further down the line. But yeah, you're right, there's huge uncertainty for every team. I mean, even if you look at like the Irish women's team were in camp at the weekend, and it was their very first camp of the year, but they have such a crucial year in the sense that like it's a World Cup year. The Six Nations, they've no fixture schedule for the Six Nations. They don't know when they're going to play their World Cup qualifier. I mean, you'd obviously know far better than me, but being in a training camp and not knowing what you're actually training for or trying to peak for is very, very difficult. And the provinces were all back in training today as well, but like you said, no one knows if there's going to be games this weekend. So look,
Kieran, would I be right in saying that it's nearly a year since the women last played a game?
The women last played in October 24th, I think, because I'm actually writing a piece about it for tomorrow's paper, when they played their rescheduled Six Nations game against Italy. Now obviously they were supposed to play France as well, but ran into trouble because they weren't deemed to be elite athletes by the Irish government, and then France were going to come to Dublin, but I think they had some COVID cases in their camp as well. So look, it's very, very tough for a squad like that. I mean, like I said, this is a World Cup year. It's a huge, huge year for women's rugby, and it's just been totally off the radar for the last while. And like I said, having a training camp is all well and good, but what are you actually training for? And like sport is all about peaking at, you know, certain moments, but Ireland kind of don't know where they are at the moment, so it's not easy for anyone.
It would be easy to push that back though, wouldn't it, for the Six Nations, for the women's Six Nations into April and May? There's a window there.
Yeah, there is, but I suppose the tricky element of that is like Ireland are supposed to be playing in a World Cup qualifying tournament as well. Now Scotland and Italy are two of the four teams that will be involved, so I don't know where you're going to end up in a situation whereby the Six Nations games count for double. But like I said, like it's well, all well and good pushing the Six Nations, but what about the World Cup qualifier, which is ultimately what this year is all about for Adam Griggs's team? You know, you'd be concerned then about kind of the development of like certain young players when they're not getting game time, because the men's game has been ticking along nicely, you know, with the Pro 14, you've had the Champions Cup, the Six Nations finished, but like the women's team haven't been playing games at all because the AIL and Interpro series have been totally put on hold. So yeah, look, it's very, very tricky.
Just looking back at the weekend, you mentioned there is the prospect of having a Munster-Leinster game. It would, like, our Interpros are quality games, Cian, aren't they? When you look at some of the Pro 14 games that we've seen this year, it would be good for both national level that, you know, hopefully we get a Six Nations, but that the lads are playing competitive games.
Yeah, 100%. I think the games actually over the last while have been quite good, and like last weekend was decent as well, and it's probably no surprise that when they're obviously better when you have all the internationals playing. I think Andy Farrell would certainly hope that he could get a game like that, because it would probably act as a trial match really. the Munster-Leinster game, you saw like the team that Leinster were due to send down to Comer Park on St. Stephen's Day was missing like most of their international players. Now, if the game is to go ahead on Saturday week, I believe it's just kind of TV schedules and stuff that they're kind of trying to sort out at the moment. But if that was going to go ahead, you'd imagine it would be two full Munster and Leinster teams. Now, that doesn't happen all that often. I know we had it in the Pro 14 semi-final at the tail end of last season, but it would be absolutely brilliant. And then if that was to lead into the Six Nations, it would set it up nicely. But like I said, the organisers are in a race against time here to get it sorted, because, but I guess if the last few months, the last year have taught you anything, it's that you have to be adaptable. And to be fair, I think Irish rugby has adapted pretty well. The situation at the moment of the Champions Cup is totally out of their hands. It's a French decision, and EPCR's hands are tied as well.
Keen, is there a possibility that the Six Nations could progress without the French? It's not until February the 8th when it's due to start anyway. If the French aren't willing to travel, could the other five countries just keep tipping along without them?
I would find it hard to believe, probably because of the TV revenue that's involved in the French side of things, because like so many of these sporting decisions, a lot of it comes back to money. I think the reason the Six Nations and Bernard Laporte are so optimistic and confident about it going ahead is we saw at the end of last year with the conclusion of the Six Nations in October and also the Autumn Nations Cup, it went pretty well. Now, I know Fiji would obviously have something to say about that, because most of their Autumn Nations Cup games were postponed, but by and large it went off pretty well. So, and it, to be fair to the Six Nations as well, like they're kind of saying behind the scenes that they've upped their testing and kind of the number of tests that they're going to do, which is something that France had kind of requested them to do. So look, everyone is doing everything they can, but like Six Nations without France isn't really the same, is it? Particularly when you look at how good they've been over the last couple of years and how good you'd expect them to be this year, I don't think Six Nations without them would feel quite right.
No, it wouldn't. So you just get more realistic and scrap the Rainbow Cup. I mean, can you really see South African teams coming here in the early spring? I can. So scrap that and move the Six Nations back to them. I mean, get
put
a bit
Ruby on that fixtures committee there. Another one for you, Ruby.
No, but you have to be realistic. You're all just faffing around. What happens if and what happens if? So we'll make a decision. Make the right decision. Let's move on.
Yeah, the Rainbow Cup is definitely, of everything that's been kind of thrown in the air, the Rainbow Cup is definitely the most ambitious of them all, and ambitious is probably a kind enough word to use for it. You look at the situation in South Africa, like they don't even have a vaccine program in place yet. It's very difficult to see how teams or Irish teams are going to travel down there unless they're all vaccinated and the South African team's coming here. Look, it's fair, I agree with you, Ruby, it's very hard to see how that will work.
It's
but
crazy stuff, like, even pretending yeah. It's going to be on. Let's make a decision. Come on, lads, do something for them.
Exactly, especially when you look at the fears over the Lions Tour as well. If there's doubts over the Lions Tour, then there has to be doubts over a brand new competition coming in April as well, which really is only around the corner.
And Keane, what about the current contract situation? We've been talking about it quite a bit over the last few months and the fact that there has been a bit of a stall, but we have seen some contracts being handed out, albeit not to players. Is there any developments on them being looked after anytime soon?
Yeah, I believe the discussions are starting now at the moment. So like you said, there's been Dan McFarland obviously signed on and Paul O'Connell joining the Ireland coaching team. Like that all suggests that there is movement in the background. Or these could have been, you know, agreements that have been made previously, but yeah, look, it pushes everyone really up against it, isn't it? And like Donegan said, like that's kind of made the Interpros almost a bit spicier, I think, over the last couple of weeks, because like certain guys know, not necessarily that they're playing for contracts, but like that they're playing for, you know, that they want to stay on their decent salary, and while cuts might be inevitable, you know, they don't want to have their heads turned by teams across the pond. And that's the risk. The longer this goes on, you know, we've seen kind of the Ben Healy situation now. I know that's a bit different, but the French clubs still have, you know, like far greater cash than the Irish clubs do here. So while there might be a bit of a slowdown in terms of the recruitment, you can be sure they're lurking in the background and monitoring the situation. But I think having seen that the coaches' contracts have been sorted, the players, you'd imagine, are going to follow suit. But that's not to say it's going to be as straightforward as just sitting down with David Nusafora, the RFU performance director, and, you know, signing on the dotted line. Like, these are going to be, I would imagine, pretty tense, you know, negotiations. Again, Donegal would know far more about that than I would, but given the current climate in terms of cuts that are across the board, it's going to be very tricky, I imagine, to please everyone. And if the IRFU manage to get everyone to stay put, I think they'll have done a pretty good job.
I'd say the words unprecedented times will be mentioned a few times in those negotiations. Keane Tracy, thanks so much for joining us. And for anyone who's just joining us right now, a little bit of breaking news. The Heineken Champions Cup and Challenge Cups have been suspended temporarily. We'll be back after these.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM. Welcome back. It's kind of like highs and lows, Donegal, isn't it? Like a really good win for Munster and then the Heineken Cup is postponed for a while. Hard to get that momentum going, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But as Keane Tracy said, people had kind of heard about it early in the week and it was coming from government, the French government. And you can see what was going on between that Bayonne and Leicester Tigers game, the amount of numbers that were spread through that. So I think it's kind of taken out of rugby's hands. There was a bit of a worry that there was going to be a head-to-head between European rugby and the French clubs, and that there was talks, like Ruby said, that they might go on without them and that some teams would get the points of a 28-0 win. And I just think it would have ruined the integrity of the competition.
We've only just figured out what was happening in this competition to be changing all the rules and the teams, yeah, and everything again now.
But there is a load of moving parts. The one thing that remains, though, is quality interpros. There was two brilliant games, and to be fair, I think we saw the proper pecking order. Never mind about the teams, but I think the individuals, I think everyone's given Johnny Sexton and Conor Murray a hard time. And I think over the last few weeks, they've shown why they're so far ahead, to be fair. I think if you look at Chris Farrell's try for the pass from Conor Murray, and you chat to young fellas, everyone wants to make the beautiful spin pass off their left arm. He just pushes the ball brilliant and puts him in the corner. And I just thought, when Leinster needed someone to step up, Johnny, in that, what you'd nearly call in GAA terms now, the third quarter, just after half time, he just dropped a gear and spat him out the back. I thought he was incredible. But Connacht will be kicking themselves, and I think Ulster, to be fair, they were flat. They had to come to the RDS and get a result, and I was disappointed what they brought. I thought they needed to bring an awful lot more than that to their game.
Jordan Larmour looked quite good. Big boost for Andy Farrell.
Jordan Larmour looked like he'd been hanging around with Michael Flatley for the last few weeks. His footwork was incredible, really was. You look at Hugo Keenan, was incredible. James Ryan, another strong game. Caelan Doris is an unbelievable player. You just watch his work rate. And then another one is kind of Robbie Henshaw, just putting him back in the team. Is incredible. And someone that's probably getting a little bit more attention now, but what a player, Damien Delande for Munster. We don't chat about some of the signings enough. We like to focus on the Irish players, which is rightly so, but you can see, well, this guy's a World Cup winner. What a player. His ability to have double, triple efforts and to help people out is just incredible.
So tell us a little bit about him, because you obviously look at a player like that with a different eye to general rugby players, because you're an elite.
Yeah.
You've been on a pitch with some of the best players in the world. What do you see in somebody like him that makes him be able to have such an effect on a team?
What I like is that he gets involved in other areas bar his work. And I think Connacht, actually, I know an awful lot of people are talking about the last play, but you could have probably played on that if you were Connacht. Because if you look at the last scrum, Delande is practically inside Ben Healy's pocket. He's there, I got you, Ben, I'm going to look after you. And all Connacht have to do there is, that's a kind of six on three with Mike Haley at nine. Munster had two in the sin bin. And Connacht just got to actually, it's called in training, it's called race the ace. It's just catching the ball, bringing it to the line and passing it back deep. Basic skill you'd be doing from kind of schoolboys up. And Connacht pick and jam and go down the short side. Delande, for me, Marie, it's the amount of work he does that you don't get a stat for. if you know what I mean, these kind of pulling his players up off the ground, organising the defence. If you looked at him, he probably start really poorly, but you want to play with guys like that. He makes the pitch smaller.
So when Connacht had that massive overlap, who didn't get their head up and see it? Who wasn't looking at the game?
I watched, looking back, Kieran Marnion is shouting at Jack for some sort of a call. But Ruby, because I've thought about this, who does this lie with, the players? And we've had this with critical decisions before by Connacht, but that's the moment. And you have to execute in the biggest moments. Munster down to 13, Mike Haley's playing scrum half. It is simple, catch pass to the edge. Or else you go down the short side. But going down the short side, you're leaving a massive kick for Jack to knock it over for the touchline to win the game. But if you just execute that, like, and I think Andy Friend did well to hold his head about it. But I actually think I would be so disappointed if I was...
is it 8, who's whoever calls the line out? Is it 9, 10, your first centre? Who's the leader?
It's your half-pack. It's your 10s just calling the ball there. If Sammy Arnold runs a really tight line to hold Damien Delande, and honestly, that is I'm convinced that's nearly as good as a 6-on-3. Mike Haley at 9, of course he'll do his best. But simple execution error, and I think Connacht will be kicking themselves, and I think Jack Crowley, Carty will be kicking himself. I think those moments, you hope to have moments like that. But I think Andy Friend's got to take a bit of it as well, because you scenario train. You actually say, okay, lads, here we go. We need a try. Scrum here. They've two in the bin. What do you do?
So that's what I was going to ask, Donegan. How do you get better at that?
I think they all know what to do. And I think he said something really critical after the game in his interview. He's there like, mentally, we need to start believing. And they all know what they have to do there. That is race the ace to the corner and score in the corner or score under the post if everyone executes correctly. And I think it's actually just showing the nuts to go for it and just actually mentally wanting that moment. And look, that's the horrible bit about sport as well. It pushes you mentally to the edge. And Ruby, you know those moments when you have to execute under pressure. And, you know, it can be a bit choking.
It is. It's to think. It's to always be thinking. You talk about concentration in sport, but it is to always be thinking and never looking at the clock. It's to always believe you have time, even when you don't, so that you never make a rush decision. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a confidence thing, but it's a concentration thing. It's a huge concentration thing, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But look, I know this isn't exactly what everyone would want, not having the Heineken Champions Cup or the Challenge Cup. But I'll be honest, I'd gladly take an Interpro once we get Six Nations, Marie. And I know we were chatting about finances, and I want the players to do well in contracts, but my honest, big, massive fear at the moment is we're going to start losing the foot soldiers, the RDOs on the floor, the people that support teams. That's who goes next, you know. Of course, I think players will play ball and understand that they're going to have to take a hit in their contracts, but you would worry if we lose the kind of next wave of players due to losing important people on the ground.
Yeah, it is really worrying. It's actually one year to the actual day that China announced their very first death caused by that mystery virus, they called it, in Wuhan. And it's mad to think that a year on and we're still in this situation where there is so much uncertainty and everyone is trying to figure things out and get things back on track and get back to matches. But we didn't actually get to talk about our sporting highlights at the top of the show. And there was a bit of magic in the cup, I have to say, all things considered. I was really taken by Tralee and their win over Derby, and I think a lot of the reason was because of their song afterwards. They sang Adele, Someone Like You, a good power ballad. I'd say you'd like a good power ballad now to change room.
How did they come up with that as their song?
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're really good at it as well. I just loved it. I just thought it was like, when you're in sport and you have those moments, you can see it, like they're a team. It was just pure joy, elation, like absolutely amazing scenes and an amazing win for them. But just the whole story and everything that seems to be coming out of the club seems to be good crack as well. There was a really good story. There's an Irish connection, actually. Their manager, Jamie Vermiglio, he played for Killarney Celtic for a while. He lived down there. We'll hopefully get him on later in the week. but he had some really good quotes about their grounds man after the game. They were really worried that the match wouldn't go ahead because of the bad weather, and he actually slept in a tent on the ground just making sure that everything was going well. And then the generator broke and the manager had rang him at like 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. and they're really worried about everything, but they got going in the end. But yeah, just a really few really nice stories.
Dunner's fuming, like, and it was such a special moment for them in the changing room, that someone had to go and video it and then put it out in social media and then comes the backlash with it. I mean, alright, the times it's in it, there's no one going to say they were right to do it, but it was a moment between a team that should have just stayed in the changing room. But why did one of them have to go and put it on social media and get them all the stick they're getting now? Some things are just meant to be in a team, and that should have just been kept there. I just think they didn't need to be getting the abuse they're getting now in the UK for doing it, if they just kept it in between themselves.
Yeah, but that's the backlash, and I think you're right. I think that the dressing room is a beautiful place, and it's amazing. As soon as you leave it, it's nearly gone. But, you know, by throwing it up on social media there, you're showing everyone the unique moment that is special to you alone. And I think...
They are. I know and the stick they're getting, I mean, you look across the UK and the restrictions that they're under, no different than here. Mm. And you look at the fallout from it. They could have had that moment and got no abuse for it if they just could have kept their phones in their pockets.
Yeah.
They have been doing it, though, for the last few games as well. It's not the first time that we have seen them come out and sing that song. It's like their trademark, and I think the club actually tweeted it out themselves, so there is blame there for them too. But definitely there is a huge amount of backlash and because of it, but there is an awful lot of support for them and what they're doing as well.
Ruby, what about you? Had you highlight?
I didn't really, Dunners. I was flicking between Arsenal and Newcastle just as Connacht and Munster kicked off, and I was kind of getting excited. It looked like it was going to go to penalties, and I was thinking, wow, after such a drab game, we could be going to get excitement here, and no. Arsenal had to go and score two, so that kind of ruined that one. Emil Smith, whatever his name was, cropped up and stuck one in the corner. I'm thinking, oh, I just could have got penalties out of this. There might have been some bit of excitement. So no, there wasn't. Like, for me, when Nace was cancelled due to the frost, I mean, there was a couple of brilliant races there on Sunday that are on Wednesday, but that kind of deflated me a little bit, I'm afraid.
What about the Welsh Grand National? How did that go?
Oh, it was a cracking race. Adam Wedge won it for Evan Williams. He got two hurlers of falls earlier in the day as well, Adam Wedge, and he got back up, did 10 stone one on the horse. The girth broke at the second last, and actually that's why horses wear two girths. Now, it's not a rule in France, but it is in Ireland and England, where a horse has to wear two girths, and the outside one is just like a safety strap. So when his inside girth broke at the second last fence, he had the outside one on to hold the tack in place. So yeah, and they're both Welsh, Adam Wedge and Evan Williams, and it meant a lot to them. And it was just actually reading a quote today to see Evan Williams just kind of elbow somebody else and in saying well done compared to the Chorley football team, how racing again was be able to behave itself.
And just not on, I was just reading today about Scottish racing, saying that, you know, the sport mightn't be viable. Ruby, is that kind of, is that to the same extent as us? Are we starting to look at it now where they're looking, you know, when we look to other countries and
completely
see?
Completely different funding mechanism, Donica. English racing is completely, not completely, but a lot of funding comes through the revenue from the from gambling, and each race is done separately. In Ireland, it's centrally funded, so there's two completely different funding mechanisms. Now, we could be 2 hours talking about how English racing is funded and Scottish racing the same, but
we might need that later in the week, lads.
We might, but it is, and that's the problem with English racing, is that with the drop in, with all the betting shops closed, the revenue streams coming into them is so much smaller, whereas in Ireland our funding is, it's government centrally funded, and therefore we have a better spread, and the race courses, whilst they're not making money, shouldn't really be losing any.
Donica, was Munster yours?
Yeah, it was. And to be fair to Keane Tracy there, he highlighted one of the bits I really enjoyed, and it was probably in the 82nd minute, Billy Holland chasing down a winger to just make sure that he didn't score. Like, it's just those kind of moments that someone just nearly finds something within them to stop them going over. And look, it was an average enough game. Munster's defence was strong, but the last few minutes did have me out of the chair jumping around to just keep him out. I honestly did think when Connacht were sitting down though, for that scrum, I was there, oh, here they go, it's all over, you know, Connacht execute here and it's over. but Munster found a way. And sometimes those wins, Marie, are, you know, just get across the line. I've been up to the sports ground and come out of there 3-0 and been delighted.
Yeah, well, we have a text in. No word on Louis Barry scoring against Caoimhín Kelleher. Why? Well, we will be chatting FA Cup after this quick break with Stephen Kelly.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Well, I did say just before the break that we would be talking FA Cup, but I think that we need to start with the off-field news first with Stephen Kelly. It was revealed over the weekend that Damien Duff had stepped away from Stephen Kenny's side. I don't think it's very clear still a few days on why he has stepped away, but reports have suggested that it could have been over the FAI's handling of the motivational video, that saga that happened late last year. So Stephen, I've given up trying to figure out what goes on in the heads of sports people as I work with Donica and Ruby. So instead of trying to figure out what Damien Duff was thinking, I'm just going to ask you.
Yeah, I think this is a good ploy, to be honest. To be honest, it seems quite amicable. Like, I know Damien a long time, and he's relatively new in the coaching scene. He's gone off to Celtic and done really well, and he's come back, and I'm sure this is a job he's really enjoyed working with. But, you know, from the outside looking in, it just looks like, you know, there's something that, you know, either wasn't right for the two of them, or, you know, Damien just felt like maybe this wasn't the right time. He wanted to step away from it. You know, there's no real telling of what actually happened, but it was more just this, from both parties, it seems to be very amicable. The statement from both of them was very complimentary to everybody. So, you know, it's hard to tell. And I doubt it was related to, you know, that motivational video. You saw Damien's comments on RTE the day or two after the game. I think when he came, he was doing Champions League and I was working on it with him, and, you know, he was very dismissive of those comments and quite funny in the way he articulated kind of putting them to bed. So I'm not too sure it's related to that. It's just, you know, just one of these things that happen, I think.
Okay, it's one of these things that happen, but at the same time, when Stephen Kenny rolls around now for his first press conference of the new year, that's what he's going to be asked about straight away. So it does put him in quite an awkward situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I suppose he's the one that's going to have to give the answers. It's not going to be Damien, I suppose. It's going to be Stephen when he's in the limelight. And, you know, I suppose it's the circumstances. And if things were going really well and we were winning loads of games and we were qualified for tournaments, there'd be no questions, no issues. It'd be just that this is what's happened. He decided to move on. And, you know, whether this, he made it, Damien decided this wasn't the right career path for him at the moment. Like I said, he's a relatively new coach. You know, this is a question Stephen's going to have to ask or answer now because of the current circumstances, and the team aren't performing well, and we're in a predicament where results have been, you know, at a premium, none at all, to be honest. And there's going to be loads of pressure heaped on him due to that sense. So this is just going to add more to it, and it'll probably detract slightly from the football side of things because there's going to be off-field issues.
Does Damien Duff walking away heap even more pressure on Stephen Kenny?
Possibly. It depends on how Stephen Kenny answers the question, really. It depends on what comes out between now and then, why he's left and the reasons for it. If it's just based purely on career or something that Damien just didn't want to do, or if there's something more to it that's been motivated, it's very hard to know, you know, until we get answers. It's been, everything that's come out so far has only been limited. It's been the statement, and there's been nothing, like I said, it seems quite amicable. But yeah, it definitely puts pressure on him because everybody's going to speculate that was for the wrong reasons, I suppose.
Yeah, it does feel like a kind of another blow, really, for Stephen Kenny. And, you know, everything that he's trying to do that's been good, obviously it hasn't translated to results, but like, Duff seemed to have been central to a lot of that. There was a lot of praise coming out of the camp about what he was about, just in terms of the way that he approached coaching as well. So then that leads us on, really, Stephen, to who's going to come in and take his place, because I'd imagine you'd probably need a character like him to come in, and a lot of people have been linking John O'Shea to the vacant role now.
Well, John is with the 21s there at the moment, so that's probably an opportunity and a natural progression. That's where Stephen's come from. So again, John is another player who's a relatively new coach. And this is something, myself, John, Damien, Keith Andrews, we all actually did our coaching badges together with the FAI. When we were still playing, they put a scheme on for us, and we all kind of did our AA license together. So we, you know, we all worked first hand with each other, and I know they're all very good coaches. Keith and John and Damien went on to actually coach for different teams, and I've gone down a different path, I suppose. But for John, he's coaching at Reading regularly as well. So, you know, and then the fact he's with the 21s, it is a natural progression, a step up. And Keith and Stephen Kenny have come from there, so you could definitely see that probably be an option. And I suppose the whole push for the FAI have been to bring in ex-players with quality, and how they know how to progress from the 21s, from senior level all the way through, understand the complexities and what it takes to be a player at the top level for a long period of time, which is why they're drawing on these ex-players to kind of come in and help out. And, you know, John is probably the ideal candidate for that. But he's different to Damien the way he conducts himself, I suppose.
It does feel definitely like a natural progression, but just purely from his own point of view, when you look at the results so far and the players and everything that's gone on, just from a career point of view, like, is it a good move for him then to join a camp like that, where there does seem to be some cracks in there?
It's a brave move. It is brave, and you have to think that you're going into it where you have no guarantee of how it's going to go, or if you're going to come through the side with a winning team and a team that qualifies for a major tournament, or you're going to be in a side that doesn't progress the way we want them to, and if the manager's going to be given the time. And I suppose that's going to be a massive decision for him to have to make, and he's going to have real assurances, if he's in discussions with them, to move into that role. Because if he's going to step up as a coach or assistant to Stephen Kenny, then the FAI are going to have to give him assurances that manager's going to be in place and that his job is going to be secure. And, you know, he's going into that. Not that you can give any guarantees in football, but there's going to have to be something to try and get him over the line. Like I said, because it is this current situation, the way we're playing and the performances, there's nothing guaranteed that we're going to progress or move forward as a nation in footballing terms.
Stephen, it was, of course, the FA Cup third round last weekend. Liverpool managed to beat the Aston Villa under-20s. Man United fell over the line as well against Watford. But I suppose Crawley Town beating Leeds United 3-0, that's probably the story.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I suppose of all the games, most of us would have expected Leeds, because the way Leeds conduct themselves and go about games, the energy levels, the way they press, how fiery they are. You know, the manager, he doesn't ever let them off the hook when it comes to performances, even though over the last 4 or 5 seasons they've gone out at this stage from the FA Cup, which is kind of surprising. But for me, you wouldn't have expected Leeds to fold it like they did, but what a performance from Crawley. To come away 3-0 winners is such a huge result. And again, like against the Leeds side, who are extremely well-drilled and organised and hard to beat.
Have you ever been in a situation like that in an FA Cup where you went in expecting to win and were part of a shock result?
Not really shock results. I've been in a couple of games the other way around where we expected to. To go through to the semi-final. It was Reading v Bradford. Remember Bradford beat Chelsea 4-2 at Stamford Bridge a few years ago? And they went through to the quarterfinals. We played them in the next match and we beat them at away from home. But I suppose we were expected to win that game, even though Bradford were, I think, were in League 2 at the time. But we ended up getting through and we played Arsenal in the semi-final. But we were lucky we came through unscathed. But it's a difficult game because you're always on the losing end when it comes to a big side playing against a smaller team.
Stephen, it was a different FA Cup. There was no replays. 3 games were won on penalties. 4 of them went to extra time that would ordinarily have gone to a replay. Do you think that's a good step forward for the FA Cup or a bad thing?
I think the current circumstances dictate that that's the way it has to be. For a small club coming through, to get a replay, and if you're at, again, the crowds didn't come into effect in this tournament, in this competition, because there were no crowds there. But if you're a small team that has capacity of 2,000 and you have a team like Tottenham or someone, and then you could reverse the fixture and go there and get a crowd like 60,000, some, you know, financially, that'll do your club the absolute world of good. So in that sense, it will be missed from the smaller teams at this round. For the bigger teams, for the championship teams and the premiership teams, they don't want to be playing an extra game. They don't want to go to replay. And, you know, it should be down to them and their performance that doesn't happen, but so often does. So I'm kind of in between whether I like it to continue on in the same vein or whether I prefer for the smaller teams to be given a chance, because it's been decimated. The league football, the lower leagues have been decimated financially and they need to get something back. So if crowds can get back in and there's any chance of them having a replay against a massive team, I think that would just benefit them.
They just have to sell the virtual tickets like Marine did, but it wasn't to be for them against Spurs. A lot of talk about Alfie Devine making history, becoming Spurs' youngest ever goal scorer. Is he the real deal?
There's a lot of talk about him coming through the academy, and Spurs seem to have quite a good crop of young players coming through at the moment on the fringes. And I think you'll give Mourinho credit. I know it's against Marine, so it's not exactly against the side. You know, they're so far apart in the football spectrum. You know, they're never really going to pose Tottenham a problem realistically. So it was a great opportunity to give some young players a game. And you know, for someone like Troy Parrott, who got to play in the competition last year, disappointed for not to be around this year, being on loan, but he got to play against Bournemouth for Millwall. But no, yeah, he's a good player, Devine, and he looks like he's someone that they're earmarked. But it's just getting, it's because the level of Tottenham playing now, will you get really loads of opportunities to play in big games? And the chances are probably no at the moment because of the stiff competition for where they're positioned in the league.
Did the MK Dons do Manchester United a favour pushing Burnley into extra time onto a penalty shootout ahead of tomorrow night's big match?
That's all you were looking for, wasn't it? That's all you were looking
for. A way in to just remind Marie that Man United could go top tomorrow night.
Yeah, and blow it up.
They could go top, and you know, it's unbelievable to look at the table now and think that, you know, it can go top clear by 3 points. City could be top as well. Liverpool could be down to third if both teams win their games in hand. And, you know, I still think Liverpool are favourites for me. I think City are probably, sorry to Ruby, but I think City are probably closer to getting close to the title than I think what Manchester United are. I think they're more capable of keeping it consistent results in. But no, it's Man U is a massive game for them away to Burnley. And, you know, they want teams to attack so they can counter-attack them. So this is not going to be an easy game for them.
We will be live there with Peter Smith tomorrow. It seems strange, though, that Manchester United are so close to the top, yet there's very few people who will give them the credit for it or even put them into the bracket of being genuine title contenders.
It's just down to the fact that they've been so up and down for the last few years, and with the players that they have inside. Listen, Fernandes is exceptional and he's been unbelievable for him. And when he's in the side, you give them every chance to win the game. But the rest of the team have not been consistent performers. They have been over the last few weeks and they've shown a really good counter-attack style of football. But do you really feel like they're capable of performing like this week in, week out? And that's the issue. That's where everybody's kind of thinking, I'm not too sure. At some point you think they're going to drop in form. Listen, it might not happen. They could go on to win it. Who knows? This league, anything can happen. And this season, anything can happen. But for me, I feel City are more of a challenge. City are creeping up the table. They've just gone about their business. They've changed slightly. They're winning games comfortably. They're not smashing teams. Their defensive look very solid. And I just feel that they're going about their business. And I think they're going to really push Liverpool. I think United will be up there too. I just don't think they're going to be consistently enough. And that, I suppose, that's just my opinion. Not that Ruby will want to hear that.
I'm considering ending this conversation.
I'm surprised you didn't hang up already.
Well, Ruby, you can, because we're taking a break.
All right. Stephen Kelly, thanks a million.
Cheers, thanks.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Farm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Bits of Breaking News. The Emirates Cricket Board has advised Cricket Ireland of a further 4 players who have tested positive for COVID-19, and as a result it has been agreed that tomorrow's one day international will be postponed. And Donica, a little bit of rugby news as well. Premiership Rugby have confirmed that it will take a 2-week mid-season break after the European competitions were temporarily suspended by the EPCR. So yeah, they're not going to fill those games,
no,
or those weekends.
I'm a little bit worried about that. It's the closest thing to a rugby Brexit. I think if we have the window now for them to play, but the English, I'll be honest, when it comes to their league, and I've played in it, I can tell you now, they only care about the Premier League, and that's going to be their drive, and making sure their players are in best form for the Prem is their concern. And by resting them up for 2 weeks, which they would probably have done, some clubs use the European weeks to rest up their squads so that they can be ready to go for the Premiership. I think it's going to lead to a backlog, and later on in the competition, with them saying they're going to find it hard to fulfil games. And the worst thing we want, Marie, is people not showing up. The things going on with the games being decided off the pitch. And I think you know, it's disappointing. This, from a player welfare point of view, I can see it from their point of view, but they're only worried about themselves. And I think this is the start of a little spat.
Well, that doesn't sound great.
It's exciting, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, okay. Well,
maybe
we are going.
It's not, but I'm just trying to drown the race.
I like it, I like it. Let's keep that narrative going for a few days. Okay, let's turn our attention to Gaelic Games. Our next guest is definitely one of the most dedicated GAA players of his generation. He commuted from London for the best part of the last decade to play both hurling and football with club and county. But it seems like it's the end of an era as this week, Leash's Cara Healy completed his transfer to London and he joins us now on the line. We were just speaking there, Cara, about Premiership Rugby taking a 2-week break. What is life like over in the UK at the moment?
Hi, Marie. It's real, really. I'm a teacher, so I'm working from home. I haven't left the house in 2 days and everything's kind of shut down and it feels like we've gone back in time in a way, back to last March and April and kind of a bit deja vu type of thing.
Is it easier to teach kids from home? You can just put them on mute.
And there's no teaching. So it's pre-recorded the night before and then just press play for them then the next day. Feet up. Jeez, turn off your own
school hub.
I hate it if you're asking seriously. I absolutely hate it. Get me back in the class.
Yeah, a lot of teachers, in fairness, do say that you know, this online teaching is quite difficult. Well, it's definitely difficult to be a parent when the kids are at home and you're trying to get them to do anything that you tell them these days. But just your career, Cara, must be difficult because I think anyone that has been following the GAA for as long as you've been playing knows how much that your club and your county, Leash and Portlaoise, mean to you. To kind of have it come to an end in the middle of a pandemic, it must be quite difficult for you.
I suppose everyone goes around looking for the perfect ending, whatever sport they're playing. And I kind of knew this year was my last year that I was going to kind of do the travel in 2020, and I was really looking forward to it. And I would like to finish off on a high with Leash footballers and try to win something with the club football and the club hurlers as well. And I didn't even get to finish the seasons out with any of them because I couldn't come back and finish the. I got to play in the summer with the club, all right. But once I was back teaching in September, I didn't even get to finish the last games with the club, so that was quite disappointing. But it was out of my control, so it's not something I'm beating myself up over or anything.
Cara, you're looking forward to having a bit more time to yourself. Like, I could imagine your schedule was hectic from finishing work in school on a Friday to getting home to you know, make the selfless act to tug off your teams.
I suppose I'm still going to be playing club football and club hurling over here, and if either of the London County teams wanted me, I'll certainly play with them if they did call me. So as regards training and stuff, things will probably just remain the same. I suppose just the travelling at the weekend and, like you said, rushing off on a Friday after work will be gone, so it'll be nicer maybe to just relax on a Friday after work and not have to rush to the airport, or the same thing if we had a game on a Sunday, to not have to head straight for Dublin Airport to get back to work on Monday the next day. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward kind of to actually training with the team I'm going to play with, really, because I missed that a lot when I was playing with Portlaoise and Leash. I really did miss my teammates and being around them and being with them during the week and training with them and working hard with those. I really did miss that aspect of playing county football and hurling. So I'm looking forward to getting stuck in whenever that is.
Okay, when you were in London and having to come back to do that, did you ever feel a little bit like an outsider looking in, not being involved in the training, just dipping in on a Saturday for a match and gone again on a Sunday? Did you feel part of it, or did you feel like you were kind of just about hanging in there?
Near the end, it started to feel a bit like I wasn't contributing anymore, because I've had a few knee injuries the last few years, so I was missing games and training, and I wasn't around, and I was 10 years out this year, so because there were so many younger lads coming on, they wouldn't have known me before I went to London. So for the first 4, 5, 6 years, I still felt very much a part of it because the guys my own age were still playing, and most of my friends that I grew up with playing were still on the team and still the main bulk of guys. So when I came home, I didn't feel like a stranger. But near the end, I did start to feel, I did feel like I wasn't contributing, and the new guys didn't know me or what I was about, and so I did near the end. It wasn't the same. I still tried the same. Nothing changed from my point of view, but I certainly did feel less a part of the team. I felt like I knew less people. I knew less about the new guys, and they knew less about me. So yeah, that was near the end.
Yeah, I can imagine that, especially over the last decade, Card, things changed in terms of commitment as well, and just the amount, I suppose, that went into training and preparing a team and being part of a team. You know, it all evolved really over the last decade.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose when I moved over, would have been Justin McNulty's first year with the Leash Footballers, and that was probably... In Leash, we would have said that was kind of the switch, the real step up in terms of commitment and what was expected of county players. And it's just kind of gradually got more and more each year. So it's not really something you notice, because when you're doing it every year and there's something, a little thing added on, it's not really a seismic change. But now when you look back and go, what was it like 10 years ago when I started doing this? It is actually, it's a huge, huge difference in terms of, I think, knowledge. Of how it's not necessarily there's more training now, because there's still the same amount of hours in the day. It's more, we know a lot more about nutrition, about recovery. There's a lot more video analysis now, a lot more knowledge of strength and conditioning. It probably started off, it was just hit the gym and get as big as you can, as quick as you can, whereas now it's a lot more scientific and how you're moving and injury prevention as well. So there has been a seismic shift over those 10 years, the amount of what you're doing, yeah.
And certainly with the travel, you'll be in a great position now with your new club. Just on that side of it, just life in London, playing with your local club over there could help embed you a little bit more, having more mates around the place, more friends. Are you excited about that?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. like I said, yeah, I'm looking forward to actually training with the team I'm going to play with, because I would train with London Footballers, Hurlers, St. Brendan's Footballers, Robert Emmett's Hurlers, and I would train with them during the week, and on the Thursday I'd say, right lads, best of luck at the weekend, I'll see you next Tuesday. I never felt a full part of their squad, and then I was coming home playing with Port Leash, and like I said, near the end, the little bit of paranoia in me kind of thought, you know, there's some lads kind of begrudge me coming back to do what, you know, I'm coming back to take a lad's place, and they don't know me, so... I kind of see a little bit paranoid. Did they want me coming back sometimes? So yeah, really, really looking forward to actually well, the friends I make here, actually talking out with them on a Saturday, yeah.
Care, I made that commute for 10 years, three times a week, Dublin Airport to Heathrow, wherever else you're going. You're not going to miss that.
No. Three times a week, it's a lot heavier than once a week.
Doesn't matter. Still the thoughts of having to get through Heathrow and get to wherever you're going.
A mule for Toblerone.
They were probably saying to you, "Well, that's not too bad. London's only an hour flight, but it's not an hour door to door, is it?"
No, when you leave in London again, you get to Leash. It's probably four and a half if you're cutting as tight as you could.
By the time I leave my house here in Richmond now down to Port Leash, if I had a lift from the airport, you'd be between 5 and 6 hours. If you were getting the bus, it'd be between 6 and 7. So
Carrie, do you think you're going to be a dual star over there now? You said footballers or hurlers, could you do both?
I'd be a dual player, all right. I know about the star word now with the condition of my knees and the age and everything. I'll be a dual player, yeah, absolutely. I'll play hurling and football for as long as I'm picked. I'll be playing hurling and football, yeah.
Brilliant. Cara Healy, thanks so much for joining us. I'd say for sure that you have given Leash people and Port Leash people some absolutely brilliant memories. I saw that tribute that Port Leash made up and put on YouTube. Some great pictures there. Best of luck with the next few months and London and the pandemic and everything that goes with it. And hopefully we'll be talking to you during championships. So guys, that is all we have time for today. I'm delighted to say that tomorrow we have woman of the moment, a friend of Ruby's, Bryony Frost. I think she's a friend of yours anyway. Just put everybody who
She's a jockey, yeah, Marie. She's
everyone who's in racing.
I think I've spoke to her twice. I doubt
as a friend of Ruby's.
Three times tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. She'll be a friend after tomorrow. And we'll be live to Turf Moor for Burnley and Manchester United. Tara Stewart is up next.